by producing community festival and events including Artoberfest, Chico Paleo, the True North Tour, the Silent Film Festival, the NorCal Jazz Festival, the Salmon Festival, and more. So to learn about Friends of the Arts, visit friendsoftheartsupstate.org. And by the Vitamin Fox, providing a large selection of traditional Chinese medicinal formulas, nutraceuticals, antioxidants, and enzymes combined with acupuncture and personalized service. The Vitamin Fox supports community radio and our right to use all natural and effective medicines. Founded in 2006, the Vitamin Fox is located at 1224 Mangrove and is on Facebook and can be reached by calling 345-9685. I'm excited to be here on a topic that feels a little edgy to me, a little dangerous, but I'll tell you, it is such a homey topic at the same time. All mammals are born with mammary glands that they use to nurse their young with. It is a friend to you from the time that you go through your menarche when you're first starting to menstruate, until they are either surgically removed or you die. And so your breasts are a really important part of you as a human being and as a woman especially. And my guest today has thought about this a lot more than most people have, and she's become an activist in order to educate and find breast liberation for all of us, really. She's part of the founding women of the Chico Breast Liberation Movement. Her name is Rain Alyssa Scher, and I'm really pleased to have you with me today. Hi.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so the more I was reading about this today, the more I was thinking about how silly and controversial it all is and how it plays into so many different people's ideas about our who we are as women, or at least those who have estrogen challenged mammary glands. I mean, that doesn't make any sense to you, I know, but no matter who you give estrogen to, they will develop what they call gynecomastia, or bigger breasts. So it's to me, it's kind of an issue that gets more and more interesting as I think about it or talk about it. But how did you get involved in breast liberation?
Chico Breast Liberation was founded by myself and my good friend Megan 6 years ago, but we started talking about this long before then. We started talking about this probably at least 10 years ago, and you know, exploring the many issues from the microcosm to the macrocosm, from the personal to the very political, that are related to the freedom and autonomy within our own bodies, and especially in living in a place like Chico, where we get, you know, a lot of days usually that are over 100 degrees in the summertime, and you see a lot of men walking around, you know, in the heat and at the creek and those kinds of things, without a shirt on, without anything covering their chest. And yet it's still this big deal, you know, for us to just have that simple comfort that they take for granted, that actually less than 100 years ago was extremely risque and actually illegal for even men to do. So I also want to be really clear that Chico Breast Liberation is really about the liberation of all genders and all bodies. Not all people who have breasts are women, and not all women have breasts. And you know, it's sort of the starting point for the discussion, and it's the way that a lot of people in our mainstream culture frames the discussion about bodies and this particular aspect of our bodies. But we are very much about, you know, promoting people's authenticity and autonomy to define their own bodies, their own body parts, and their own gender.
Yeah, and that's I think that's, you've nailed it right there, and it's so important. You know, the only way I've been involved really in this is about breastfeeding and about women being able to breastfeed their infants or their young children anytime, any place. And that's was always important to me as a public health nurse. And I got less involved in the other issue because I think it was more of the fact that I was not comfortable with my own disrobing in a public place and couldn't face like anyone looking at me. You know, would say I was shy. And so I think it's a very bold thing when women come forward, you know, I think, or men. You know, I don't know if men think about it even. I don't know if most men do. But anyway, it's just, it's such an important issue as I read about it, how it's almost like we condemn Islam for making women cover in many ways, you know. So some of the women, all you see are their feet and their eyes. Or not even their eyes sometimes, you know. And yet in our culture, we are made to cover also. And it has just about the same logic. And it has to do with titillation or ogling or whatever you want to say about somebody's view of someone's sexuality, I think. What are you thinking?
Well, first of all, I want to be careful about talking about Islam and you know, people's practices within that religion, particularly because I'm not a member of that group and I can't, you know, speak to represent that group. But I do know that, you know, even within Islam in America and in other countries, there are women who, you know, it's a choice for them. You know, and it's not that somebody's making them cover their hair or, you know, wear long sleeves or whatever. And, you know, that's a much more complex topic to talk about, the feminist choices within different cultures and what it means to different people, depending on, you know, how they associate with their religion or spirituality. But there is a very important piece in what you said, which is the issue of objectification and non-consensual sexualization, you know, and one thing that my co-founder Megan brought up in an interview last year was about the fact that, you know, we are attracted to people all the time. And in this culture, you know, you can be attracted to somebody's face. You know, you could find their face pleasing and attractive, and that doesn't mean that you have to, you know, catcall or shout obscenities at them. That doesn't mean that you have to physically assault them. That doesn't mean that you have to even, you know, let them know in any way that you find them attractive. You know, we pass people on the street that we think are attractive just looking at their face, and we make these choices daily to not, you know, act in these transgressive ways just because we see something that we find attractive. So, you know, saying that a woman or any other person taking their shirt off, you know, is you know, titillating. Well, part of the reason it is because our culture is so steeped in over-sexualization of everything all the time. And, you know, we're human beings, we're human bodies, and most human bodies are, you know, sexual at one point or another or more in their life. But you know, that's just a piece of who we are. That doesn't define everything about us, and that doesn't necessarily correlate automatically to any certain part of our body, whether it's our face or our breasts or our feet or whatever. You know, the concept of men taking their shirt off, issue that affects men too, and it's less and less extreme. Most of the time, we live in a culture of a very specific ideal of beauty for any gender. And, you know, men are told by the media that they're supposed to look a certain way too. And there's a lot of fat shaming in our culture. And there's a lot of other body shaming in our culture. And there are certainly, like, even on a hot day either, because they don't want that objectification. They don't want people judging their body. They just want to be comfortable. And that's their own bodies and deserving respect for their bodies. You know, everybody deserves respect.
Yeah, and I love hearing you. You know, you're a younger feminist, and I looked happened, you know, in the feminist movement, like 1973, Our Bodies, Ourselves came out. There was that Miss American protest where women were burning women's magazines, wigs, high heels, became the way that they were slandered in the mirrors, and that went on forever. And so it's so interesting to hear you so clear, so lucid, and of your approach to this, because it is about body shaming, except for the thing that some Islamic women choose to cover, which I don't think is always true.
It's definitely not always true, yeah. But find feminist Muslim women that, you know,
yeah,
will share their
topic. Yeah, but it is. Yeah, I know that too. So I wanted to kind of read down my list of different things that I took notes. Here's the first thing. These are just random. It's kind of how I think, sort of random. So consumer fetishes, consumer created needs. So like, let's say Victoria's Secrets. They have made millions of dollars to alter the shape of a woman's body. You have to be pushed up or suppressed or somehow, and it's gone in styles at different times too. You know, what your breasts are supposed to look like inside of your clothes even. So what's your take on this multi-million dollar industry?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, it's definitely all about profit. You know, there are lots of industries, not just the bra and lingerie industry, that make huge profits off of enforcing this specific ideal, including people who do liposuction, you know, the razor waxing, all that. Shaving, body hair removing products, you know, all kinds of things. And there is this constant reinforcing that you have to consume something to sort of justify your body and make it good enough and or better or whatever it might be. And, you know, we have very little of the messages comparatively in our culture telling people, and especially from the time you're a kid, that your body is enough always. You are enough always. You know, you are unique, right? Because every body is different. And there is so much beauty in our uniqueness, and really a lot of that commodified industrial messages that we get are all about putting everybody into one little box, making everybody look the same. And the reality is that's actually physically impossible. I mean, most of the images you see in the magazines or, you know, in the advertising, the billboards and stuff, you know, they're airbrushed. They're slimming them down. They're doing all these things to make them look a way that, you know, they're telling us we should all look, when it's physically impossible, even for the models that are in the pictures half the time. So
I know. And, you know,
it's dangerous too. You know, it leads to things like bulimia and anorexia and suicide and all kinds of things.
Yeah, well, or it's analogous to it. But another thing along with that I thought I'd mention now is about plastic surgery, that so many women, as a nurse practitioner, I see that many, many women have had their breast augmented to look a certain way, to have a round, almost balloon-like shape that's very unnatural. And that's was interesting when I was in Cuba, especially. I went to a nightclub place and the women were dancing. And what was so honest and refreshing about them is that nobody there has these big round balloons for breasts, you know. Where if you go to Las Vegas, some people have brought that out to even a it's so garish, they'll be like a size 50 or something, you know, cup size. And it's just but at the same time I feel kind of edgy about saying anything about plastic surgery, because so many women have made that choice. It's a life choice. It's an important choice that they considered based on wherever they were in their lives. And I don't want to say, oh, what you did was wrong.
Yeah, and there's many reasons why someone might choose to have that kind of elective surgery. There's also people who have elective reductions, right. And there's actually people who get, you know, flack for getting reductions, and you know, most of the people that are choosing that, they have back pain and things like that, and that's why it's, you know, it's not even entirely elective, right? There's also people who that may actually be something of a life-saving procedure for you know, people like trans men who are binding their chests. That can be really unhealthy and really uncomfortable, and you know, sometimes it can make all the difference to their life and their identity to have that elective removal. And some would argue it's not even elective for them either. So yeah, there are so many layers to that, and it's a really complex thing, and every person makes that decision, mm-hmm. you know, for their own reasons.
Yeah. And I think respecting people and their choices. You know, today on Facebook, I was going through it, but some people were talking about the military. And, you know, once somebody's been in the military, you can't undo it. You were sure. in the military. And so, you know, trying to frame it from a activist standpoint, you know, you don't want to, you know, get into a row with somebody. That was your choice. You made that choice at that particular time in your life. And women make these choices, and they have to be respected for it, I think. Anyway, I go on. Do you have anything else to say about those surgeries?
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I want everybody to be safe and healthy, you know? That's sort of the bottom line for me. And I can't begin to really judge other people's choices around that, except to say that I want everybody to be, you know, healthy. And safe, and yeah.
So this is one of the things that I'm just bringing this up, because I feel somewhat without a bra, I feel these ways. So I kind of thought, oh, maybe I'll just mention them. Okay, so without a bra, I can feel sloppy and not well dressed, and with an older person, with, you know, I mean, you feel, it makes you also feel older, you know, unsupported in any way. So there's some of these issues about that are so uncomfortable and so restrictive versus the freedom of not wearing them, which feels a lot better.
Yeah, well, and again, that's different for different bodies. So like larger bodies, it might actually contribute to back pain to not wear a bra, you know. Personally, I am a small person in all ways. And it doesn't make a difference for me. I haven't owned a bra in over a decade. But I've also read that there, you know, there's at least one study that found that not wearing a bra actually increases your muscle tone in your pectoralis muscles and your chest in general, which actually gives you more natural body support from actually creates less strength in that way. But, you know, that plays into, again, that image of idealized beauty of our culture and also the general misogyny that pervades what is, for example, professional, right? Most women who work in professional settings seems unprofessional. I have known multiple women who've had a talking to from, you know, management at the store or wherever that they worked for not wearing a bra to work. And ultimately, my first reaction is, well, why is your boss even noticing? Why is it any of their business? And it's not actually impeding your job function, right? So, but it's part of what is professional, and that tends to default to, you know, our idea of male as norm in the patriarchal culture we live in, and that, you know, equates to breasts being constrained, right? They're not moving, right? That part of your body is not supposed to move. But also, it's part of the ageist dynamic of our culture. You know, whether you've had children or not, you know, as you get older, our bodies change. And, you know, years ago when I was telling my mom about our group and our event, you know, I was talking to her about how there's this dynamic, which is also a racial dynamic, where on television you'll see you know, white women, you'll see breasts that are covered and restrained and all of that. And it's sexualizing if you see like American women, you know, without them being covered. But at the same time, we can turn on National Geographic and see indigenous women who tend to have black or brown skin totally topless, and for some reason that's not sexual. We don't see them as sexual beings. We don't see them as whole humans in our culture, you know. But at the same time, when I was telling my mom about this, she said, you know, it actually makes me feel really good that we at least get to see those women, because it makes me feel more comfortable about my body and the fact that, you know, breasts sag over time, and you can see these women of varying ages, you know, just living in their bodies, and to varying degrees of age, and that it's just okay, you know. Yeah. This is totally a social construct, you know, that matters.
yeah, I was going to ask you about indigenous cultures too, about that, and I agree. I mean, it's basically, another point of disequilibrium where those women aren't seen as sexual beings almost. They're seen...
By our culture.
By our culture. Of course, within their own culture, they are who they are, but we don't see them.
And there is actually a big study, now I'm blanking on what year it was done, but decades ago, about the sexual practices in cultures all over the world. And it was found that it was really a minority of the world population actually finds breasts to be sexual, and, mm-hmm. and that's a part of sexual attraction for them, you know. So we're a minority culturally on the planet that we sexualize breasts so much. Like you were mentioning earlier, you know, it's a part of our mammalian bodies that has a very practical function.
Yeah, exactly. And here in this country, you can be arrested for indecent exposure, public lewdness, or disorderly conduct in some areas. I mean, there's a fine line about what's legal and what's not. And if somebody complains about you, the police will come if you don't have a shirt on or a bra on, you know, some something. And it, and also the definition of the breast now has gotten down to the areola and
right.
the nipple,
right.
which is just so bizarre. You can have any kind of cleavage you want, you know, and any kind of dress, but you just can't show
right.
the darker parts of your skin. So it's so funny.
Yeah, actually, it's funny. I noticed this phenomenon years ago, you know, that when you go into a place that serves food, you know, they say no shirt, no shoes, that kind of thing. And what constitutes a shirt in our culture in modern days and today, a person who has breasts, a woman can walk in wearing a tiny bikini top that covers just the nipples, and that might count as a shirt. And a man can walk in, I've seen this so many times, a man can walk in wearing nothing on top but a vest. So if his shoulders and back are covered, but his nipples can be exposed, that counts as a shirt to walk into a place that serves food like a supermarket. I wanted to get back to what you said earlier. Oh, yes, you were talking about the law. So yeah, that's a thing. It can be nuanced, and certainly there are different laws in different places. I am most familiar with the California law and here in Chico. When we first did our first event for Go Topless Day, you know, we did a lot of research to make sure that we knew whether this was actually direct action civil disobedience or not. The basics in California is that we have California Penal Code 314, which is indecent exposure. And the law was written in the late 1800s. It uses very vague language. It uses the word private parts to describe what's exposed. But the case law over the years has clarified what that means. So starting in 1967, in a case in 1967, the California court said breasts never constitute private parts for the sake of California Penal Code 314. So under no circumstances are breasts inherent to indecent exposure under the state law. Now, there is no state law specifically protecting it. There is no state law specifically outlawing it. The specifics of 314 to be convicted of indecent exposure under state law, the instructions a jury gets is that they have to prove two things. One, that you exposed your bare genitals, which again, the court has clarified breasts are not genitals. And the other part that they have to prove also is that you acted intentionally with the intention to sexually offend or arouse yourself or someone else. So they have to prove your intent. Mm-hmm. And there is another case of a man falling asleep naked on a beach and waking up to a cop standing over him and being charged with 314. And the court overturned his charge because he was asleep. You know, there was obviously no ill intent there. He fell asleep early in the morning when there was no one on the beach. And then people showed up, you know. So that's what the general law is. Now, there are specific places within California who have passed more specific laws around this, outlawing it more specifically. Chico is not one of those places. We don't have a law in Chico or Butte County or the state of California specifically outlawing complete bare-chestedness for women. But we also don't have any law protecting it.
That is so interesting. I've never heard those. And so thank you for that. That was great. So 8/26 is Women's Equality Day. And on the 28th, you're having an event. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah. So International Go Topless Day is always on the Sunday that's closest to Women's Equality Day, which is the day that women got the right to vote in the United States. That was actually started by an organization outside of us. Like I said, we were talking about it for years before we actually did an event. And that's when we discovered that this event already existed. So 6 years ago, we started doing our own Chico event for International Go Topless Day. And on that day, there are people, women across the country and in other countries who are risking arrest, who are doing direct action, civil disobedience. So for us here in Chico on our side, which challenged the law last year, a charge was dismissed because it was bogus. And that police officer was enforcing his own morality. He was obviously personally disturbed by my being bare-chested in public. Park ranger we've interacted with in Chico over the 5 previous years we've been doing events have acted very civilly and polite to us and have affirmed that we're not breaking any laws. But challenging the law here. So we have a celebration rather than a protest. But we're also standing in solidarity with the people who are risking arrest on that day. And our aim is to educate people about what their rights are and about why this issue matters and how it connects to normalize, right? Because even though we have the legal right, most people don't feel comfortable, don't feel safe. And so, you know, we sort of practice that safety in numbers thing. You know, more people feel comfortable practicing being free in their body that way when they're, are supporting them. So on August 28th, from 1 to 3 p.m. is our annual potluck picnic and discussion at the 1 Mile picnic tables. All of our events are optional. You do not have to get bare-chested to be at our events. You can show up and be in solidarity with others without taking your shirt off. You could take your shirt off and put it back on if you want. You know, it's totally for their own bodies and being safe and respected in those choices. So we tend to share food and then we have a little discussion and it's generally a good time. I mean, we definitely encounter some pushback from from a couple of citizens that were in the park.
Can you say what that was?
They were really upset that we were there. They were having a kid's birthday party, which is often the place that adults retreat to as their excuse for why they are uncomfortable with us, is that they say, oh, what about the children? We have to protect the children. Well, like you stated earlier, breasts are supposed to be like the first source of nourishment for a child. And in our experience, including on that day, most children barely even notice. Most children have no problem with us until the adults with them start freaking out, and then the kids get the cue that, oh, something's wrong here, and they start to freak out, you know, or look concerned. So these people were, you know, hiding behind that old rhetoric of, our children are going to see you, and that makes it offensive. And, the guy was screaming in my face and said, you know, it's offensive. I said, well, you're screaming in my face, you know, offends me, you know. And they said, well, we're going to call the cops. And, you know, I told them, you know, you can go ahead and call the cops. And they're going to tell us exactly what I'm telling you right now, which is that we're not breaking any laws. And this is public space. And, you know, we have every right to assemble in this public space just as much as you do. You know,
good for you.
So the police did show up and, you know, basically they affirmed that we weren't breaking any laws, and they said they were trying to keep the peace and all of that. But ultimately, after the police showed up, you know, it was very, very uneventful because, yeah, the reality is we're not breaking any laws, and we are assembling in public space.
Well, thank goodness for the commons. You know, one other thing I wanted to mention, and I should probably let you go, but there's also, this other thing about expanded prohibition of female toplessness to prepubescent girls, even infants now, that little girls are covered up in a way that kind of like pre-sexualizes them or something. It's just the strangest thing, you know, which I think is so objectionable. And then I think that's all I wanted to say, but there is a website, gotopless.org.
Well, that's the organization that started the day. Mm-hmm. We have our local organization has a Facebook page.
Oh, good.
Chico Breast Liberation on Facebook. So you can search us by Chico Breast Liberation. You can also, search for our event for Go Topless Day in Chico. And, you know, you can join our group and help organize or, you know, get updates about other events that might be happening. Yeah, just to reiterate, our annual event is on the 28th, Sunday, August 28th, from 1 to 3 p.m. at the 1 Mile Picnic Tables. What you were just saying is definitely is very relevant. It's this, there's always a pushback, right? Whenever there's progress, there's always pushback. And so there has been some progress, right, since the bra burning days in our as a culture learning to accept people dressing in different ways. There's also pushback with, you know, rape culture and victim blaming and saying that, well, if women are wearing less, then they're asking to get assaulted. And then there's this, you know, pushback of, yeah, we have to cover little girls who, yeah, have no idea what you're talking about. You know, they're just being a little human being. And one of our organizers, Nikki, was sharing with me, because she's a twin, about how her twin brother, when she was a kid, she was very aware of this transition that happened, where all of a sudden, as a little girl, she had to start covering herself where her twin brother didn't. Mm-hmm. And it was this strange thing that didn't make any sense. And it doesn't make any sense. It's totally arbitrary. And it's all about, you know, enforcing the misogyny of patriarchy.
Yeah. Well, Rain Chair, I really appreciated talking to you today. And I hope I didn't make too much of a fool of myself with the things I said. But I also wanted to forward promote another time we'll be together. And I heard you on Sue Hildebrand's show the other night, did a great job. And you are organizing another event, which is Showing Up for Racial Justice. And can you just forward promote that for us so that folks can know about the meeting? And then also you'll be on with me on the Peace and Justice show on the 19th.
Yeah, so the day before that show, there will be a meeting. Showing Up for Racial Justice is a national organization whose goal is white people organizing to end white silence and stand in solidarity with people of color support the movement for racial justice. And so we are working to create a Chico chapter. And on Thursday the 18th from 5 to 6 p.m., we'll be having our general introductory meeting, so to speak, at the Chico Peace and Justice Center. People can show up who want to get info, want to get involved. And we'll be talking about what Surge is and what we might be doing here locally.
All right. Thank you for all the good work you're doing. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. All right. So this is Chris, and the show is called It's Your Body. We'll be here until 7, and it'll be followed by kids programming at 7. And let's go. I think it's peanut butter jelly time tonight. And I just want to play you a song, and then we'll transition into another topic. And thank you, Rain, again.
Whatever you say, say nothing. When you speak about, you know what. For if you know who should hear you, you know what you'll get. They'll send you off to you know where, for who could say how long. So whatever you do, don't let anyone hear you singing this song. Now you all know what I'm speaking of when I mention you know what. And I fear it's very dangerous to even mention that. All the other ones are always near, although you may not see. And if anyone asks who told you that, please don't mention me. And whatever you say, say nothing when you speak about you know what. For if you know who should hear you, you know what you'll get. They'll send you off to you know where, for who can say how long. So whatever you do, don't let anyone hear you singing this song. Oh, know who I'm speaking of when I mention you know who. And if you know who could hear us, you know what he'd do. So if you don't see me again, you'll know why I'm away. And if anyone asks you where I've gone, here's what you must say. Oh, whatever you say, say nothing when you speak about you know what. For if you know who should hear ya, you know what you'll get. They'll send you off to you know where, for who could say how long. So whatever you do, don't Don't let anyone hear you singing this song. Well, that's enough about so-and-so, not to mention such-and-such. And I'd better end my song right here, I've already said too much. Oh, the less you say and the less you hear, the less you'll go astray. And the less you think and the less you do, the more you'll hear them say. Ah, whatever you say, say nothing, when you speak about you know what. For if you know who should hear ya, you know what you'll get. They'll send you off to you know where, for who could say how long. So whatever you do, don't let anyone hear you sing this song. No, whatever you do, don't let anyone hear you sing this song.
Yeah, so that just seemed to go along with our breast discussion, because just even speaking out about breasts is controversial, and who knows why, I don't know. Anyway, I wanted to forward promote the Stonewall Chico Pride Festival, August 19th to the 21st. It is starting off Friday, August 19th, with a teen dance at Trinity Methodist Church, which is free to ages 13 to 18, and then an adult variety show at the Chico Women's Club, and that show starts at 8. On Saturday, August 20th, the festival will be in downtown Plaza from 10 to 4. There'll be a beer garden and live entertainment over at the Women's Club from 2 to 5, and an adult dance that night at the Chico Women's Club. On the Sunday, August 21st, there'll be a community brunch at the Oak Grove in Bidwell Park from 9 to noon, and that's also free. So if you want more information, go to StonewallChicoPride.com and see you there. And so the next thing I sort of had set out for myself to talk about the Zika virus. And this is something that is being downplayed in some areas and then amplified in others. But I do think it's a concern that we should all be aware of, and especially because our representatives are not looking out for our interests. The White House in February called for $1.9 billion to combat the virus. However, Congress failed to send a funding message to the president before leaving last month for their seven-month recess. According to the Obama administration, $201 million of the $374 million allocated in April for Zika has been spent as of last week. The Health and Human Services Secretary, Sylvia Matthews-Burwell, said federal health officials have allocated about $38 million in funding to combat Zika just in Texas. In a letter to Texas lawmakers on Tuesday, she reiterated warnings that the Obama administration is running out of Zika response funding. According to The Hill, Burwell issued the letter in response to conservative lawmakers' claims that the administration had not yet used about the $400 million in funding that it was shifted to response efforts. It's a very real problem, though, for women who are living, like in Florida or Texas. They are being told to move north, stay inside, wear long clothes, and use insecticides during pregnancies. And that doesn't really cut it for places that are that hot, for people, some of whom don't even have air conditioning. So it's a very, very frightening thing, because the Zika virus, as you may or may not be aware, is not only spread by mosquitoes, it's also sexually transmitted. It's in all of our bodily fluids. It seems at this point like it's more present in bodily fluids than the HIV virus. Zika is in semen, vaginal fluids, saliva, urine, and breast milk. The transmissions have occurred so far women and men to men, and men to women, which is the most common. We don't know how long Zika can be transmitted sexually, but has been found in semen 93 days after infection. Some people will have symptoms of infection, fever, rash, joint pain, and red eyes, but a lot of people have no symptoms with this. So it's especially dangerous for women who are pregnant, because it can cause something called, that they're really not talking enough about, folks. It is pretty bad. Microcephaly isn't nothing. It means a child is born with a lacking brain tissue. In other words, the child will never be normal. Never, may never be able to see, hear, walk, talk, anything that we assume as normal human functionality. These children will be very, very impaired throughout their lives and have a very poor quality of life, and they'd be very, very financially draining. So it's one of the reasons why many at the Center for Disease Control are saying how important it is to have full range of contraceptive methods available to women, in the, especially in the South, in these states where the mosquitoes are more prevalent as this spreads north. And so this is another kind of battle that's coming up around having access to birth control. And places like Puerto Rico have gone ahead and they're giving free contraception to anyone who needs it or wants it, which unlike here in the United States. So there was an infant death yesterday in Texas. It was the second death from the Zika virus. Let's see. Zika can be detected in a blood test. I tried very hard to find out how much that blood test would cost to someone who wanted to get tested, had been traveling, say, to South Central America or Mexico or any of the places where people are being bit by these very aggressive species of mosquito that carry the virus, and I could not find out. If you were exposed, if someone you know might be exposed to mosquito bites while pregnant, while traveling, or just came up pregnant after traveling, or their spouse traveled, boyfriend traveled, you would want to call the Butte County Health Department at 538-7581 and ask for more information about testing. And I'm hope is if you fall into an at-risk group, because they are finding more and more cases, so that means they are doing testing. As of August 3rd, there were 1,825 cases in the United States, and of those, almost all were travel-related. So that's one thing. And in Florida, the case numbers are continuing to increase. The 15 cases so far. And let's see, what else do I want to say about this? You can go to the CDC website if you travel and you want to provide the communities that you care about with Zika information. There's information in all kinds of different languages, because this is showing up in 35 countries and territories in the Americas, as well as 7 countries in Oceania or the Pacific Islands, and 1 country in Africa. So it's written in many, many different languages. But pretty much what a Zika prevention kit is a bed net, standing water tablets to kill mosquito larvae, insect sprays, and condoms. And condoms are super important to be used during pregnancy if there's any chance that that your spouse might have contracted the disease. And remember that some people don't have symptoms of the virus. They don't get the fever, rash, joint pain, and red eyes. They have nothing. So just to be careful, I would recommend that people use condoms in pregnancy if one of you have traveled outside of the country to any of the countries of, say, South America, Central America, Mexico, or the Caribbean. And that's pretty much all I wanted to share about that. We have a couple of minutes left in the show, and I hope I'm not glossing over any of that. You can go to the Center for Disease Control's website to read more about this, and I hope you will if you're concerned about it or if it's relevant to your situation. And another announcement I wanted to make, it has nothing to do with women's health or anybody's bodies whatsoever, except for the Palestinian people, is that there's a community member whose name is Chris, who is going to be sharing his Christian Peacemaker Team experiences in the West Bank city of Hebron on this Sunday, August 14th, at the Chico Friends Meeting House, which is at 1601 Hemlock, at the corner of East 16th Street. And there will be a simple meal that's a send-off for him. He's going back to Hebron at 7:30. And then at 8:30, there will be a presentation about his work in Palestine. And this is just an important important thing to support people who are doing good work in the world. So I'm going to go ahead and just play a song here, and then I might come back on or I might not. We've got some time ahead of time before the end of the show. I want to thank our underwriters especially, and I'll come back on. No, I'll go ahead and do that now. I want to thank Mary's Gone Crackers, manufactures award-winning gluten-free and certified organic and vegan crackers, pretzels, and cookies in their own dedicated gluten-free facility in Gridley, California. Their products are allergy-friendly and can be found in grocery store and health food stores throughout U.S. and Canada. More information at marysgonecrackers.com or 888-258-1250, and by the Bankruptcy Law Office of Michael O. Hayes, a proud supporter of community radio. Michael Hayes offers free consultations and payment plans for Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcies and has been serving Northern California residents for more than 30 years. The telephone number for Michael Hayes, spelled H-A-Y-S, is 892-8916 or at mhayeslaw.com. So stay tuned for Peanut Butter Jelly Time. And I'm going to play you a song now from Mary Flower. She is a blues and ragtime guitar acoustic artist of the year. And she will be playing in Chico on Friday, August 19th at 7 p.m. And she is known for her exquisite finger-picking and expressive slide guitar. And she plays with passion and precision and creates power and beauty in just about anything those chords touch. So this is from her CD called Misery Loves Company. She'll be at the Unitarian Universal Fellowship Hall on 1289 Filbert Avenue between Bryant and Moss in Chico, August 19th, 7 p.m. So if you want more information about that, let's see, you can go to uuchico.org or call Mary 343-1693. So here is Mary Flower.
Your back. Are your clothes all
one hand on the television.
They try to tell you what's wrong and what's right.
Underneath sinners.
But if you ask, how about something to eat?
Just a hot dog.
They're gonna answer in voices so sweet.
Yes.
You will eat.
You will eat.
By and by.
By and by.
In that.
And pray.
Live on hay.
I like it.
You get pie in the sky when you die.
That's a lie.
Now the Starvation Army, they play.
Can't you hear the trombone ring?
Oh, they sing and they clap and they pray.
Yes, they
till they've got all your coin on the drum.
No dancing for you.
Then you know they'll tell you.
Ride this train.
You will eat.
You will eat.
By and by.
By and by.
In that glorious land above the sky.
Way up high.
Work and pray.
Work and pray.
Live up high in the sky when you die.
Same one. With all that strife, the voices, that's what they tell. And if not, you all are going to hell.
It's the lake of fire.
And that's
working folk of all countries unite.
Brothers of the world unite.
Side by side, we for freedom will fight.
All the way to the docks.
When this world and its wealth we have gained, us will sing this refrain.
Follow me.
By and by.
By and by.
Once you've learned.
I believe.
Chop some wood.
Chop some wood.
It'll do you good.
It'll do you good.
And you'll eat in the sweet. By and by.
Oh, that's good.
That's right. And you'll eat in the sweet. By and by. That ain't no lie.
No lie.
Butter jelly time.
Peanut butter. Jelly time,
peanut butter jelly time.
Way, yeah. Now there you go.
There you go.
Peanut butter jelly.
Peanut butter jelly with a baseball bat.